Welcome to this week's podcast episode where we are talking about IEPs and 504s. Now, this is not something we've talked about on here before, but it is such an important topic that I thought we would bring in an expert. So I want to introduce you to Catherine Witcher. Catherine Witcher has over 25 years of experience solving special education struggles. Motivated by watching her family navigate IEPs for her brother with Down syndrome, she earned multiple special education teaching certifications, but left the classroom life behind to become a collaborative resource for parents and teachers at the IEP table. She founded the Master IEP Coach Mentorship and Network, created the IEP Development Wheel, and hosts the Special Education Inner Circle podcast. Her tested strategies have been implemented by thousands to build effective IEPs. With deep expertise and creative solutions, Catherine is dedicated to supporting your special education journey and improving outcomes for all children. Now, you will love my conversation with Catherine. She's so upbeat. She has so much good information to share. You just know she's an expert by hearing her talk about her craft and her passion. So let's get into this week's episode where she shares with us some things we should never talk about at the IEP table and then also gives us some tips for 504s as well. You got into this profession to make a difference in your students' lives, but you're spread thin by all of the things that keep getting added to your to-do list. I can't create more hours in the day, but I can invite you into my counselor clique where you'll finally catch your breath. Come with me as we unpack creative ideas and effective strategies that'll help you be the counselor who leaves a lifelong impact on your students. I'm Lauren Tingle, your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Hey, Catherine. I have Catherine with me from the Master IEP Coach Mentorship and Network, and she is an expert at all things special ed. I'm just going to give you that title, like umbrella all things, because I wanted to have someone on here to talk about IEPs and 504s and be that expert voice where maybe, you know, I don't have that and you listeners maybe don't feel like you are the special ed teacher in your school. You shouldn't feel like that. So I brought in an expert to chat with us about all things special ed. So thanks for being here, Catherine.
I'm so excited. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to dive into the conversation and let's just give some strategies and some hope and some nuggets that hopefully everybody can take to their next, whether it's an IEP meeting or a 504 meeting, but just kind of bring some new strategies to the table.
Yeah, that'd be great. So a lot of counselors are probably high school counselors are finding themselves sitting in an IEP as a transitional specialist or that person who has to sign the form for that. And they don't really know what they should be bringing to that meeting. And then they also might find themselves, if they're lucky, they're in the same kind of position doing that with a 504. But most high school counselors are in charge of the 504. They're doing everything from scheduling it to inviting the people to coming up with the strategies, which often feels outside of our zone of genius. And depending on where you are, maybe you got some good training on that, or maybe you're always trying to consult with other counselors to figure out what the 504 should look like. So let's talk IEPs first, because that's bigger picture and maybe not as much responsibility that the counselor is showing up with. Like, they didn't have to prepare the outline for the meeting or anything like that. What are some things that high school counselors should always be saying at that table? And what information should they be bringing? What are things they should never be saying at that table?
This is one of my favorite conversations, is talking about, you know, like, what should we never say at the table? Because I think that's where we sit in our thought process in our head, where we're like, okay, like, what do I need to say? What should I not say? You know, what do I need to make sure I bring up? What shouldn't I? And the fear really comes from not wanting to say the wrong thing.
Exactly. I don't want any like legal repercussions for saying the wrong
thing. Right. And it's a big process. And so we have IDEA law that governs, you know, the IEP. We have our 504 laws, regulations, and things that govern that. I do just want to say, since we're talking about both of them, there is a big myth out there that I think sometimes confuses counselors or even other staff members that are in more of the special education department. Parents will hear, which basically means they went into some Facebook gossipy group.
Right.
Okay, let's just call it out. Okay. They went somewhere and got this information that, like, my child needs a 504 and an IEP. No, they don't. They don't need both, because anything that goes in a 504 is going to be covered within an IEP. Therefore, you know, you don't need that. I also hear a lot of times of, I can't give up the IEP and go to a 504 because a 504 is not enforceable. Yes, it is. It's absolutely enforceable. We hope that we don't have to get to that point, right? So there's this fear going, like shifting between paperwork. It's like hopping between, you know, baseball and basketball. Like there's different rules. There's different things that happen, but they're both very valid sports. Like they're both very valid pieces of paper to get access to things. It's just, you have to know the different rules of the different processes. So if we're going to talk IEPs first, one of the things that I want to make sure that counselors are really aware of is to never say, we don't do that here. And I think a lot of times, because as a counselor, you have a broader perspective of what's happening in the building, and you're going to be hearing a very detailed conversation in an IEP meeting, maybe something very specific to a family requesting a one-on-one aid support for all or a portion of the day. They're going to be maybe asking for some specific one-on-one reading instructions. They're going to be asking for some really specific things. And the main special education team there is going to be kind of negotiating this conversation. And I have had counselors in the past be like, well, we just don't do that here. Like they're trying to justify why the school team is saying no. And that's one of the biggest fire starters that can happen in an IEP meeting, because just because you haven't done something doesn't mean that it's not possible to do it. So I would love for, as a counselor, you to think of, you know, you're a solution finder at that table. That's really what your role is at all of these meetings. It's like, I need to help find a solution. How am I going to be a support and solution? So instead, be the how. Anytime that you hear somebody say, even if it's one of your colleagues say like, we don't do that here, you can always shift that conversation in a very respectful way and say, yes, we never have done that before. How would it be possible to get to that end result? If you notice, I skipped over, like, let's just say it's a one-on-one aid support. I skipped over that. How would it be possible to have a one-on-one aid? How would it be possible to get to that end result of the child being supported fully?
That way, if it isn't possible, then you're still okay. But we want to see the results. We want to see them achieve their goals and define success. So that's the real thing we're aiming towards anyway, not all the little steps to get there.
And it might be a one-on-one aid, but it might not be a one-on-one aid, because a lot of times, again, parents will come to with this idea of saying, you know, my child needs a one-on-one aid. And it's because that's the advice that they've gotten from the outside is, well, your child needs a one-on-one aid in order to access this math class, in order to access, you know, reading, in order to access the science class. They have to have this one-on-one aid. And when I'm working with a parent, when I'm coaching them through, I'm saying things to the parent of, listen, what do we really want? We want your child to, and we describe the end result. And there's always more than one way to get to that end result. A one-on-one aid might be the right decision. It might be the thing that we go towards. It might be the thing that we, you know, dig our heels in about to do that. But what are some other options that might get us there? So again, as a counselor, anytime that you can be that, how can we get to that end result? And you can be focused on the end result and say, okay, there's multiple ways to get there. One could be a one-on-one aid. Okay, team, how else could we get there? And open that conversation. That's a really big deal.
Yeah. And just being open-minded to even the thing that has never happened in our school before. Like, you don't have to promise that it can happen or say that it can't happen, but you can say, I can go do some research on that. I can go ask, you know, what they do at other schools, or like, you are now the informant for the school. From, you can ask around at the district. Like, I worked in a big district, and I'm sure there were things happening at other schools that were resources that we didn't have at our school, but I mean, we found a way, and somebody else in the district with special ed said, yeah, that's possible, but I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, we definitely have a very limited amount of experience when it comes to being the professional at the table, and parents don't understand that. And I think sometimes, as you know, teachers or as counselors, we don't recognize, like, we really do. I have 26, 27 years of experience professionally in the special education world, and I will never say I know all the solutions or all the things. Like, there's no way.
Every situation's different.
Yes. Yes. There's just as unique as the child, there's going to be things. So, all right, you ready for another one?
Yes. What not to say? Because I'm sure you've heard a lot of them.
Oh my gosh. A lot. I could probably write a book on it. I'm not going to, but I could probably do that. Wait and see. Well, let's just wait and see. Like, let's just wait and see. And that's a very, it seems like a very nice way to compromise at the moment. Well, we'll wait and see. And a lot of times then you as a counselor, you'll throw yourself into that solution. Let's just wait and see. I'll go check on them next week and let you know how they're doing.
You're creating more work for yourself as a counselor.
Yeah, cut it out. Don't do it. Wait and see is not a strategy. That's not wait and see with an action plan beyond just, I'll just check in on, let's wait and see. But while we're waiting, like what's the see part? Like we need to see the data. We need to actually get some information that quantifiable, like that we can say, okay, this is what we're seeing. So usually wait and see means we don't have enough information to make a decision. So what's the plan to get that information? So be part of that information gathering beyond just an observation or checking in.
What would some of those points of observation or data gathering be? Like as a counselor, should I say, I'll watch their grades from here on out. We'll see if they're turning in assignments. Like what kinds of things can a counselor be watching to see?
Yeah. So you can be that person, not just even watching their grades or that, but maybe go in and do an observation and see what is the child doing during class time, because the teacher is continuously saying the child's off task and they need to have whatever the teacher's complaint is, like, this is not working, right? There might be something that you can see and take information on. Oh, whenever you give directions verbally, they're really not understanding them. But the minute that you have them on, you know, up on the board in front of the classroom, or if they're on the paper, you might catch something that, oh my gosh, I think this child's a visual learner and he's not processing all the auditory things that are happening. Or you might notice something that when it comes to peer relations, like, oh, you know what? This is the only class that this child is in with his best friends, and he's really lacking the social time. So the reason he's being disruptive is because he really wants more time to socialize and to build this relationship. And that happens a lot in high school, right? It's like, I just want to get around my friends and figure this out. And so you might be able to say, okay, let's give the child some strategies to engage in class and give some extra opportunities outside of class and get him connected to his peers to do that. So it's really that bigger observations, trying to find some trends of what is happening and being an extra set of eyes. Most kids are not going to know, because you're a counselor and you're not necessarily as hands-on as the other teachers. They're not going to know that you're there really looking at them, and you can be like the best spy.
And that's a great way to continue that partnership with the special ed teacher. Like you already have that person called you to this meeting. You probably already know each other a little bit, but like, hey, let me see if there's something that you're not seeing, just the same way, like we would give each other feedback. We're working together for the student. You get to continue that relationship with the special ed teacher. And then I also think something that you said there, it was making me think, when you're a counselor and you're sitting down at that table, you really are eyes and ears around the whole school. Whereas a special ed teacher is in that classroom with that student. You mentioned like knowing their friends or knowing what the other classes on their schedule are and what those teacher relationships are like. So you come in as this just strategist as a counselor, because you see a whole picture too that you get to bring to that table. So I think that getting to offer that to the special ed teacher just helps continue that relationship with the teacher. Like we get to bring our expertises to the table.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right, I've got a third one that I definitely wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Please don't be silent. Don't be silent.
Which that's probably the easiest thing to do, is just to sit there and say, okay, I'm here for the meeting. I'll sign my paper and move on. I don't need to create any extra work. So it's probably pretty easy to do that one.
And it happens a lot. And so in parents, they afterwards, they're going to go talk to the other parents or talk to, you know, their advocate or talk to them, and they're going to be like, I don't know, like
whoever that was in that meeting.
She didn't even say anything. I don't even know why she's there. Like why? Or they're going to say like they might even call out of like, do you even know my child? Right. So our strategy here to make sure that you're not silent is to make sure that you do have some experience with that child, even if it's from afar. You've got to take some time to gather some information of, you know, I've really noticed that your child loves. I've really noticed, like, make sure that you have some type of personal information that lets the parent know that you've either engaged or observed with their child in that. But here's the biggest thing you mentioned a lot of times, you know, it's about that transition planning and you're asked to be part of this transition planning that just feels like this elusive piece of paper that's supposed to be magical in preparing a child for the future. And there's so much more to it. So I'm going to drop, this is where we're going to get a little technical here. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not practicing law. I'm not giving you legal advice, but I love to teach you where to look. And if you, as a counselor, can take one phrase from Ideal Law and just kind of anchor it in your work inside of IEPs, it would be huge. So the purpose of an IEP, so inside the purpose of an IEP, and this is, again, in the legal document, it says it's to provide a free and appropriate public education. Now, that's what most people know. Like, oh, we have to provide FAPE. We say, you know, FAP, free and appropriate public education. And that's where the conversation stops. It's just, okay, we got to provide FAPE. We got to do what's appropriate. But there's two phrases right after that. So a free and appropriate public education to meet a child's unique needs and to prepare them for further education, employment, and independent living. And that's our goal at that table, is to meet a child's unique needs and prepare them for further education, employment, and independent living. What's interesting is that is the purpose of an IEP from the day a child gets an IEP at age 3. Let's just say they came into the school. First thing they know, we have an IEP at age 3. You're now seeing the child when they're 14, 15, 16, 17. And that should have been the focus the whole time. But in the IEP paperwork, we actually don't see those three categories of further education, employment, independent living show up until the transition paperwork. So that's a good thing for you to know as a counselor, as this was the entire purpose all this time, but this is the first time we're seeing further education, employment, independent living. And everything inside of that IEP should be aligned to those three things. So if you see something that is in the IEP that is not preparing a child for further education, employment, independent living, and I want to encourage you, you know more about the future than a lot of the other people at the table, because we are head down in special education world or disability world. And you are working with a wide variety of students, most who do not have IEPs. So you see things like, okay, the trend in this generation is they are more connected. Welcome to social media and all the other things. They are more connected than in the past, but they have less community and less relationships. So when we're taking a child who has an IEP and we're saying, we want them to develop relationships with their general education peers, a lot of their general education peers don't know how to develop relationships.
Right.
Like, so you can be that connection between like, okay, we understand that we need to work on friendships and relationships and support and those kind of things. You know, let's keep in mind that the average 15-year-old right now doesn't know how to have a give and take conversation. So now we want our child with an IEP to go have a give and take conversation, and they get looked at like, why are you talking to me like that? Like, why are you having this conversation where we're talking about like the normal everyday things of like, how's the weather? We don't do that anymore.
Right. And so, I mean, you said so many good things in there, and I'm thinking even just start sitting down at the table and not being silent, like starting the conversation and saying, hi, I'm Lauren Tingle. I'm your child's counselor, because they might have not even met you before. And, you know, it's easier to sit there and just, you know, bring your computer in or catch up on your emails or something. Like, I've seen people do that and it's not helpful. I've just thought, if I'm going to come to the meeting, I might as well participate and build that advocacy piece that I talk about to my high school counselors all the time of, hey, we're constantly saying, this is what our role is. This is what we do. This is how we can help. And the IEP meeting is just one more place that we can do that. And by using your voice, you're doing that. By connecting with a family, by showing that you know their student. I mean, I love what you said of just even having one little nugget, and just thinking as a parent too, if someone was in a meeting with me and knew one thing about my student, about my child, how happy that would make me as a parent and immediately make me trust that person. Like, oh, they do know my child, or they saw my child do this, whether it was good or bad or something, I'm automatically thinking, okay, I'm going to remember who you are. You know who I am. Now we have a relationship, and they're going to use you as a counselor after that. And they're going to touch base with you after that. So it's a table where we can form relationships or further those relationships if we don't have them solidified yet.
Absolutely. And I do encourage that if you've never met the parent before. So I tell parents all the time that there should be no surprises at an IEP table. And that includes faces that you don't know. You know, it's not hard to send an email that says like, hi, I'm Lauren. We haven't met in person. You can include in your little signature, pop a little picture in there. That's okay. Let them put a face to a name and just say, hey, you know, I'm going to be there. I'm excited to talk, about your child and, you know, their next year here at the school or whatever that is. Making sure that the parent knows who you are before they walk into the room, that would be a huge deal.
Yeah. And I think it depends on how big the school is, how big the counselor's caseload is. Do they follow that family all the way through? Because of course, like at that point, we have touched base at least once every year, you know, at the IEP meeting, but we've definitely done more than that. But on a huge caseload or when it changes each year, that can feel really tough for even the counselor to remember the parent because they've seen so many students and parents. And same thing for the parent. If their school is not modeled where they're following with the same special ed teacher or the same counselor, it's like, okay, here's another person that I have to meet. They're probably pretty overwhelmed too by meeting another person in the room. So
it's one of the most overwhelming pieces is to have this like ever evolving team for your child. And you have to constantly get to know people. And if you're trying to get to know people at the IEP meeting where you're supposed to be, you know, coming up with great new ideas and collaborating, and a good IEP meeting is more like a think tank than like a problem solving in a negative way or throwing out new things that have never been heard before. Like I said, no surprises at an IEP meeting. So it's really about, you know, if we could bring the best of the best of all of our possible solutions to build this great program for the next year, but it's hard to do that with strangers.
Mm-hmm. And it would feel frustrating to sit down every single time and be like, okay, another group of people who don't know my child. I just, especially being a parent now, I just think I put myself in that parent situation a lot more than when I didn't have kids. And either way, you figure it out whether you have kids or you don't, but it makes me have a little bit more empathy for parents.
Absolutely. Same thing happened to me. So I was a teacher before I had kids. And then when I had kids, I thought back to when I was a teacher and I was like, oh, I was doing things in my classroom where I had everything set up and structured and everything was great. And the parent was like, my child does this at home. And I'm like, well, they don't do it here. You just need to structure it like this and everything will be fine. And then I become a parent and I'm like, what a joke. Like, you can't sometimes cook the chicken nuggets and mac and cheese. You can't do that on a schedule. How are you going to get everything else on a schedule all the time? Oh, I just, my goodness. It's like, if I could go back to those parents and just be like, I'm sorry.
If you spend enough time in the school and you're working with so many different students, it doesn't matter whether you've had kids or not. I mean, you're going to see what works for kids, what doesn't work for kids, what works that you should say and what you shouldn't say at a meeting. So I'm glad for this conversation to get ahead of the game and warn ourselves of things that we shouldn't say around this table. Are you a new high school counselor navigating your role for the first time? Maybe you started in this role mid-year or you're dreaming of getting your first job when you finish up your internship. I've got the perfect free resource for you. Head to counselorclick.com/new counselor playlist for a curated Spotify playlist just for new high school counselors. This tailored resource will help you level up your counseling skills, boost your confidence, and gain some wisdom that'll ease your transition for your beginning years. With episodes like What I Wish I Knew as a Beginning High School Counselor to Mistakes to Avoid in High School Counseling, you'll be ready for anything that comes your way. Get ready to hit play on your podcast player and start your journey with confidence, inspiration, and expertise. Head to counselorclick.com/new counselor playlist. Happy listening. Do you want to switch gears to 504s?
Let's do it. Let's talk about 504s.
Are there different things that you would say, don't say this at a 504? Or, you know, what kinds of things should counselors be thinking about as they're oftentimes leading the 504 meeting and maybe don't feel equipped to be doing that? Like, we're not special ed teachers. I just think I panic. What kind of strategy should I put in place? I don't know. There's a lot that goes into this and it feels scary because of all the legalities.
Yeah. So first of all, just know that teachers aren't trained in 504s either. Like, it's almost like this conversation that doesn't happen between professionals at the school. It takes a while for everybody to figure out that basically none of us got the training that we needed to do all the legal paperwork. And parents don't know that. And that's a bummer too, right? Like, I want them to know, like, okay, we are figuring this out. Like a lot of times it's like, okay, we're figuring all this out because that transparency builds trust and it helps us get to a better document when we realize that we don't have to fake it till we make it kind of thing, that it's okay to ask all of those questions. And again, I'm coming not just from, you know, yeah, I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree and I have all these certificates on it, but I've been coaching, you know, families and school districts for 2 decades. And every time I stand in a room of teachers and I talk about IEPs, I'm like, here's stuff that college never taught you. And these are teachers that have been, you know, around 20, 25 years. And they're like, yes, how come nobody told me that? And why am I finding it out 25 years later that this box on the IEP or that the IE or that the 504 works this way? Like, why did nobody tell me that before? And so just know that you're not alone in that piece of feeling like you don't know what you're doing. I would say my biggest kind of warning about 504s is that 504s, most of the 504s I've seen are fluffy. They're very general. And I believe that that comes from a lack of confidence of knowing what to put in there. So it's like, well, if I broad stroke what needs to happen, then it'll all work out because this will just cover everything. But if we broad stroke it, then that's where the accountability issue comes in because nobody knows what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. And then that's frustration for everyone.
Yes, yes, exactly. And the student's frustrated too. So especially at the high school level, letting a student know what's in a 504 and that these supports exist for them, that, you know, we have to do that. We wouldn't have a child, you know, who has a physical disability, let's just say that uses, whether using crutches or a wheelchair, we wouldn't like not tell them about the elevator and like watch them try to use the stairs. Like we wouldn't do that. We'd be like, the elevator's over here. Like, come on, I got you. Like, let me escort you to, you know, the support, the service that's going to help you get from point A to point B the way that you need help. That's what a 504 is. And we have to think about, okay, so if this child is struggling to stay on task, this child's struggling to stay, you know, regulated in their nervous system, so they need sensory breaks. They're struggling to cope with tough situations and they need to have, you know, a safe place to go to during the school day. They're struggling with their executive functioning and they need to have their planner checked every day to make sure that they have what they need, you know, going home or coming back, or they're on task for this big project that's coming up. So maybe you have to break that down. Be really specific in the document. And then be specific with the child, because teaching them not only what's in there, but how to self-advocate, because this is a document that can go with them on to college. This is a really big deal. Now, when I say self-advocate, sometimes that's taken to a whole new level where people say, well, they don't get their supports if they don't ask for them. Because they didn't self-advocate for it, they don't get it. No, it doesn't work that way. So we give them everything on that piece of paper, whether they ask for it or not. Now, can they refuse it? Absolutely. They can refuse it. We take data on that. We talk to the team about that. We talk to the parents about that. We can adjust that 504 as needed if it's something that they don't need. But we don't withhold based on their ability to self-advocate. But that's a big piece with 504 self-advocacy, and it should be in IEPs also. 504s, we're typically working then with a student who is going to be pursuing maybe some traditional college path or a traditional trade school kind of path. And we want to make sure that we are equipping them to use this piece of paper in that arena without having additional adult support.
Exactly. Because that's what we're trying to do with all of our students anyway, is have them be able to advocate for themselves wherever they find themselves after high school. Like, they're about to be adults and they need to go do that. And that's why I think it's so important when you sit down and have that 504 meeting, when the parent shows up and says, Johnny's not coming to the meeting today. I'm like, no, 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 he needs to be here. This meeting is for him. Because when they're in high school, they have a voice. When they're at a 504 table, they can share with us what's working, what's not working, you know, the classes that this is helpful in. And just like the IEP, the 504 is constantly a work in progress. Like, we're adding things, we're taking things out. We're trying to give them that least restrictive environment. And so if we don't need those supports anymore, if we don't need the 504 anymore, it's okay to be done with that. Like, your student has grown through that and they don't need it anymore. But we have to have that conversation with the student too, to see how they're feeling about those supports. So it's so important that their voice is part of that meeting.
Yeah. A lot of times at the high school age, I hear a lot of parents advocating for things, meaning supports. Like, let's just say access to a counselor, or the parent is saying, this should be access to the counselor every Friday. Every Friday, they're going to go to the counselor kind of thing. And the student gets in the meeting, they're like, I don't want to go talk to Ms. Tingle. Like, I don't want to do it.
We don't need to do that. And then I'm like, what if I'm off campus on that Friday? And that's scary to me to be written into something like that.
Right. So having something like, so if a child needs that support of somebody to talk to, you can put the plan in the 504 is like, okay, you know, like the first level person might be you, it's Ms. Tingle. The second level is the assistant principal. The third person is the PE teacher. Like there can be a ladder of supports written into the 504 that allows the child to have, let's say, a place to go calm down or a place to go think quietly that's supervised or like there's all these different options. So we don't have to mandate necessarily services at that kind of strict level. At a 504, it's good to put in that accountability and specifics. Like this is what he needs. And these are options to access that. Like this is plan A, plan B, plan C. And that's what I find in high school a lot. Is we need to have multiple plans to execute the 504 because it is so chaotic and so busy inside the high school that one plan typically doesn't work. We typically need multiple layers to it.
Yeah, that's smart to think about as you're strategizing what those bullet points are going to be for serving that student. Because if it is too general or there aren't enough options, then it might not serve its purpose and you're going to be back there problem solving the same stuff again over and over.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Catherine, this was super helpful in having a conversation, starting a conversation at least about IEPs and 504s. And you and I originally connected on social media, and I know that you share a lot of good information out there that I think even counselors would benefit from. Like, I still follow you, still learning things. And so I'd encourage the high school counselor listeners to reach out to you with any questions, get in your DMs, you'll answer them. But share with them where they can find you after they've listened to this podcast if they want to keep learning more about special ed services and kind of what you offer too.
Well, if you're listening, it means you love podcasts. So you can come follow me over at my podcast. So that's Special Education Inner Circle Podcast. And then also, if you want to become more of that leader or a confident contributor at the IEP table, I do encourage you to go look at the Master IEP Coach Certificate Program. So that is a complete IEP development system that I put together for both parents, teachers, admins, therapists, counselors. You'll love it because it's going to help you break down all these different checkpoints and understand that process in a way that you have not been able to possibly dive into before. And the more that you can be that support person at that table that has knowledge that others don't have, which you do, you have an expertise and a knowledge and you are valuable at that IEP table. It's how do you use that knowledge in a way that makes sense at the IEP table or at the 504 table? And that's what I would love to help you do is really engage at that next level. So you feel like your role is meaningful because it is.
It is. Okay. Tell them where we can find you on Instagram. I'll put it all in the show notes too. But they're listening to this. They want to go pop over and follow you.
Yeah. So Catherine Witcher. So just at Catherine Witcher, my first and last name. That's what I'm at most. I have other things. You'll find some more stories and such of Master IEP coaches at Master IEP Coach. But, go grab some freebies at masteriepcoach.com. There'll be something up there for you. It might be some 12 hard IEP questions you need to ask. Right now, I have an IEP time-saving guide up there. So you'll probably find that somewhere on the website because who doesn't need to cut some prep time out of their life, right? Like, let's do that. So go find some freebies over at Master IEP Coach.
Perfect. I know that they're going to find information valuable to them as high school counselors from you, but also maybe they'll connect their special ed teacher that they work closely with to you. I mean, just a whole big educational network here. And I just want to say thank you for coming on High School Counseling Conversations. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I told you she was going to be a great guest, and I hope that you feel the same way after that conversation. I left feeling seen and heard after hearing what she had to say about high school counselors and their role at the IEP table. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. I'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Feel free to send me a DM at Counselor Click. That's CLIQUE. I'll see you next week.